raising a family, managing their lives is comes first. And so I think that goes back to this point about being really super strategic and focused about what information we put up there as being marquee data and how we talk about it. And then moving beyond just data and telling the story about why that information shows something, either progress or not. And trying to communicate with constituents who have very busy, chaotic lives. And sometimes our work is the least important part of their life.
This is a complete tangent, but Commissioner, I've got a book somewhere called What Americans Know About Politics and Why It Matters. And one of the factoids in there is that the only position on an issue that any politician has ever taken, which more than 90% of Americans were aware of, was the fact that George H.W. Bush did not like broccoli. So maybe there's, you know, an indication in there that if somehow we tie data to broccoli, people will remember it.
Shannon, thank you. Very, very good work, and appreciate the leadership in your office to make us a leader in this idea of giving people this kind of information this way. So thank you.
So using this to transition a little bit back into sort of forecast and budget issues and really how we're, how we're going to integrate performance into that. If we go back to the slides here, just make sure I know which way I'm going. There we go. So one of the things that we did recently in the budget office is we did what's known as a Kaizen event. And for those who are familiar with lean process management, this has been around for a long time in the private sector. And even in the public sector, it's been adopted for many years. But it's not something that the city's done a whole lot of. And lean process management, the whole idea is taking the processes we have, really breaking them down into their component parts, and analyzing where we can get more efficiencies. And we've been sort of talking about this for a while and decided to go ahead and put it into practice around the budget process. And so what we did is we actually applied for an innovation grant and got a $7,500 innovation grant to run what I believe is the city's first Kaizen event. And we held that event just a couple months ago. It was over 2 days. We had 26 participants from throughout the city, including a couple from council offices, which I really appreciated. And it resulted in 34 action items around the budget process and ways that we can improve this process to make it work better, both for the bureaus, for council offices, and also hopefully for citizens. And so you can see here, we've just listed those. And I won't spend a lot of time on these, but I wanted to highlight this process again. I think it shows how we can begin to integrate this into some of the day-to-day things we do. And what I'm actually hoping, and we had two motives here. One was to improve the budget process, but the second motive was to get some key bureau people in the room to see how an event like this might work so that they could go back to their bureaus and talk to their directors and think about processes that they have that a similar system might work. And again, we had a $7,500 grant, but I would say I don't think that's necessary. Our consultants were very good, and they really helped us. The more of these the city does, though, the more in-house expertise we're going to have, and I think we can begin to run these types of events just using existing city staff. So really quickly, just to talk about some of those things that you're going to be seeing from our office and that we may be asking you for as well that came out of this, some of the action items that came out. In terms of the City Budget Office and Bureau collaboration, really making sure that we're continuing the field work and the ride-alongs that the analysts do so they can understand what's going on in the bureaus and the programs that they're analyzing. Identifying opportunities for Bureau and City Budget Office staff to work together on joint projects. We have done that on some occasions, and I think it's really worked well on both sides to get some additional understanding, so we're going to look for more of those opportunities. And then improving the analyst transition process. Unfortunately, I have really good analysts who sometimes get picked off often by the bureaus themselves, and so when we have to transition, just making sure that transition from a Bureau perspective goes really smoothly. Council direction, two of the things that we heard is that bureaus really want to get budget guidance earlier in the process, and we'll continue to work with the mayor and council on that as they start their budget processes in the fall and trying to get that budget guidance out as early as we can. We'll be talking about that in just a few minutes. And then agreeing on minimum consistent priorities. Again, the bureau staff in the room were very clear that it's extremely helpful for them when they hear from council what those priorities are going into the next budget cycle. So as they go through their processes, they can take those into account. In terms of budget process design, again, this is getting pretty specific, but There's always a really quick turnaround time after the mayor's proposed budget when bureaus have to balance and they're really looking for a little bit more time. Again, that's more of a technical back-end thing, but it's dozens of hours of work that bureau financial staff have to do in a very short period of time. And then also scaling the bureau work sessions based on council questions. There's a lot of conversation about how to make those council budget work sessions more relevant. We've got a couple ideas later on in this presentation to talk about there as well. And then finally, around improving the public process, some of the recommendations or action items coming out were to clarify what the expected outcomes of our public process are. We always talk about a public process and we engage in a pretty robust public process, but what are we trying to get at? What is that outcome we're after? Revisiting the BAC structure and requirements, specifically whether they should be different for different bureaus. We've heard a lot about large bureaus and their ability to manage BACs versus very small bureaus and their ability. And we currently have a consistent set of BAC guidelines. These are budget advisory committees for bureaus. We have a consistent set for all bureaus, and there was some conversation about whether we should make some allowances.
Andrew, since this is the first full budget cycle where we're going to have a new oversight body for the utilities, as you build in the calendar and look at the timeline, have you penciled in the key milestones for bringing the pub in into the budget process?
That is an ongoing conversation with the pub, and yes, it is definitely high on the radar in terms of exactly at what points they'll be participating.
Are you working with the Public Involvement Advisory Council to update the BAC guidelines?
We have, yeah. We've been talking to them, and I think I'm going to next month's meeting to have that conversation again, and really bringing this feedback from the bureaus back to the PIAC so that they can sort of take that into account and think about revisions. Finally, exploring alternative tools for enhancing public engagement. I mean, as everyone knows, there's huge social media potential, which doesn't necessarily reach everybody, but I think there is some more that the city can be doing in that regard.
And similarly, that we should be exploring more ways to get to non-English-speaking communities and those who don't use social media. I think there's, at both ends of the spectrum, there's ways that we can engage more folks.
Andrew? I've been involved in Kaizen, Lean, and Six Sigma for 20 years in the private sector. I just want to congratulate you and thank you for your leadership. This is a huge step forward. I think you're going to see a lot of changes for the better. And I think one of the things that you may not think about but that I saw in the private sector is buy-in from people who are involved because they believe their voice is being heard, and they are. And they're actually making changes. So I just want to thank you for your leadership.
It was really interesting. It was my first one that I had sat through. And again, everyone's a little reluctant to give up 2 days. It's a long time. And yet at the end, the feedback was almost universally positive. And even the people who had real concerns with the process, again, they felt like, hey, we have some good action items we can move forward on. So, and I would encourage you during the budget work sessions to be asking bureau directors if they've considered sort of doing a Kaizen event around particular processes. Because, I think incorporating this into how we do business, cities that have done that have seen some real successes. So I'm going to move on here to forecast, preview, and budget issues. There we go. And Josh and I are going to sort of go back and forth on this one. Again, you know, we've talked. Josh has talked about the overall economic outlook, and what this slide shows is the record revenue growth. I'm actually going to let Josh talk about it a little bit. Yeah,
that's fine. I think the one thing to note: there's two graphs here. The one on the left, the property tax revenue growth includes 15-16. We got property tax data about 2 weeks ago. It's looking like it's going to be a record except for last year in terms of property tax revenue growth. So property tax revenue typically is between 3 and 5% on a given year. We're seeing more compression unwind. We're having lots of new construction. So we're getting a lot more value on the tax rolls. So property tax revenue growth is the two fastest years of growth since Measure 50 went into place have been last year and this year. The one on the right just goes through the end of last year. That's business license tax and transient lodging growth collections. We already talked about transient lodging growth collections earlier. Again, a record there. Business license taxes went up more than 20% off of a record to get to where we are in 14-15. So when we're thinking about this in terms of a forecasting spectrum, all of that growth has been built into the forecast. We need growth on top of it in order to see money available for ongoing and one time. So in terms of, and we have some relatively modest growth targets for business license tax in particular because of that overhang I talked about before. That kind of jump makes me a little nervous because, you know, transient lodging taxes have doubled in 5 years. Business license taxes have almost doubled in 5 years. We're getting a little bit, you know, faster growth than is sustainable. And so we need more growth in order to see, to meet other priorities that we'll talk about here in just a minute.
So record revenue growth, but some concerns around sort of where we're headed on that. There are a couple slides here we've included about price of local government. We didn't know exactly where to put them, so we sort of just dropped them in here. But I thought it was really interesting. Josh, just very quickly, and I'm not even sure this is a fully comprehensive list, but we just went back to 2010 to sort of look at what's been happening, not just from the city of Portland, but other jurisdictions in the metro area as well, and a couple of these are statewide things that are again sort of increasing the tax burden on our citizens. And if you go back to 2010, you can see there was Measure 66 and 67, which can increase the income tax rate on high-income individuals and businesses. There was a gas tax increase of 6 cents. There was a City of Portland public safety bond measure of about $72 million. There was the Oregon Historical Society local option levy on the ballot that year. And then also that was the year that the city established the LEAF fee. Moving forward to 2011, Portland Public Schools increased local option levy passed. And then in 2012 was another big year with Multnomah County Library District passing. And as you'll recall, that shifted about $10 million from the city general fund over to the county and the library district. That was the same year that the Portland Arts Tax was established and also where Portland Public Schools passed the $542 million construction bond. And then moving on to 2013, that was the year the Metro's open space local option levy passed, and then the children's levy was renewed, although, again, to note, there was no increase. That was just a continuation of the existing tax. And then in 2014, similarly, the parks bond was renewed, again, which was an expiring bond, so it was not an increase, but it did continue at that level. And then we know that TriMet's been authorized recently to increase payroll taxes over the next 10 years. And, you know, the reason why we bring this up, because as the city talks about our funding needs, and we know those funding needs are significant, we've had a really robust conversation around streets and the need for significant new revenue there and the possibility of a gas tax. We've talked about housing funding and the needing to find more funding for that. We've talked about, probably more generically than specifically, about the need for future parks bonds to keep up with some of those issues. I think there's an overarching question in terms of where is the limit of Portland taxpayers. And one of the things that we're going to try and dive into over this next year is a little bit of that comparative research. And this is really hard to get at because every jurisdiction is very different. Every taxing strategy is very different, both local and state. But, you know, the question is, can we sort of look at other comparable cities and get a little bit of a sense of what our tax burden is and a little bit of a sense of are we close to that limit or is there, again, a little bit of room there? And one of the things that I think we've shown in the past is even with measures 5 and 50, which were significantly limited our property taxes to what they would have been otherwise, if you look over the last 20 years, our property taxes have still grown at about a 3.8% compound rate, which is slightly above inflation. So even with those limitations, our property taxes have grown a little bit higher than inflation, which I think says that had we not had those limitations, there probably would have been some other limitations. I don't think the property tax system that was in place would have remained untouched absent those things. And so, again, I think this is sort of that big picture question, and it doesn't just involve us, but it involves the county, and it involves TriMet, it involves Metro, and it involves the state, and really thinking about where we are in terms of that comparable tax burden.
Two things. One, it strikes me that water and sewer rates are surprisingly absent from this, and I would think that the increase in water and sewer rates would be a bigger factor for households than some of the other things that you have here. The other thing, as far as the property taxes since Measure 5 and Measure 50, Measure 50 in particular has had a different impact on different parts of the city. It's basically had no impact on East Portland because they're all paying the maximum they're supposed to pay under Measure 5. It's had a dramatic impact on the recently gentrified areas of the Inner East Side, where people who are buying some pretty expensive houses are paying taxes as if they were worth a lot less. So overall, we might have property taxes growing by 3.8%, but in parts of the city, you don't have them growing by anywhere near as much as the increase in housing values and the incomes of the people with the houses.
Moving on to the next slide then. So the next slide, again, we're trying to sort of cover some of these big issues as we go in and talk about the forecast. But Josh put together some information about personnel costs, and we've talked to you before about this, but just wanted to sort of reiterate the structural issues and challenges that personnel costs are with the city.
Yeah, so picture we're in 2004, 2005. We're hiring an individual at the low end of our pay scale in each of these categories. And these are pretty highly populated categories in the city. It's not comprehensive. It was just a snapshot. Certainly general fund, firefighter, and police officers, we pay. There's a lot of those. So picture you hire them in 2004, 2005. And then they stay in that job for 10 years. So these same people were there 10 years later. This is how much their wages would increase. That's what the graph shows, relative to the bar on the far right, which is what our general fund grew by, generally speaking. And so it's just, and again, this is just wages. Looking to the future and even probably somewhat into the past, PERS rates will redouble this chart and make it, because the PERS rates won't change the revenue side, but they'll change the other positional costs. Yeah.
Josh, last year, we talked about the fact that there was going to be a substantial amount of turnover in the workforce, that we're looking over the next 10 years to have a lot of senior, experienced people turn over and be replaced by new employees. So how does that dynamic that we talked about last year impact your projections under this structural issue?
Frankly, that happening in the past is the only reason we have a lot fewer employees now than we did 10 years ago. So that dynamic takes place both in the past and in the, and we have roughly the same number of employees that we had 10 years ago. And so we, even with the growth in the general fund, we're not hiring more employees because we can't, because we still have some pressures.
Yeah, but my point is with a lot of experienced senior employees contemplating retirement in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to be replacing them with junior employees at a much lower cost. So how does that impact the aggregate numbers?
Yeah, I think it impacts the aggregate numbers exactly as you would describe, and that it makes our budget more sustainable, but it only does that in the short term, because again, each position in that low end is going to grow, their salaries are going to grow much more rapidly than our general fund generally will grow.
You know, if I can just have you make sure I understand this graph, taking firefighter, for instance, in the last 10 years, the wages have increased 120% or 12% a year? I don't understand that.
It's actually, yes. Between, if you started at the low end of the pay scale and 10 years later you're at the high end of the pay scale, yes. And that's happened through a variety of things. It's happened through cost of living increases. It's happened through merit increases, theoretically, and it would have happened through collective bargaining. But yes.
And it's also total. It's total compensation. So PERS. Increases.
No, it's not. This
oh, it's
is
not.
Just
this
wages.
Is just salary. Sorry.
Does it include overtime?
No, it does not. We're playing
counterintuitive. I mean, the city, we have not increased the scale for an entry level position by anywhere near this much, right? Under the bargaining agreements and the budgets that the council adopted, right? The entry level pay of a police officer was 45,000, and now it's 65 or something like that.
We have raised it higher than general cost of living, though,
right?
Through collective bargain. So this is a combination of, yes, absolutely. This is a combination of again, cost of living increases, an individual moving up the pay scale because it started at the beginning, the end, and collective bargaining.
So. And, you know, getting back to the Commissioner Fish, your question about people leaving, there is a significant risk of a lot of people leaving. I haven't looked at sort of the data for the last year, but I know when we looked at it a few months ago, though, the city's turnover rate was still very, very low. So we had turnover of, I want to say it was about 5%. Yeah. which for an organization of our size is extremely low. And in fact, some labor economists actually think that's too low. They think a healthy rate of turnover is more in the 10 to 15% range. Now, that may change dramatically. I know that's something HR has been tracking and is concerned about, but we haven't yet seen, even with these eligible retirees, the waves of people leaving are more isolated, right? We're seeing it in some particular bureaus. Police Bureau is very concerned about officers leaving. But that's not even so much the number of officers leaving as it is the amount of time it takes to get new officers in the door, which is creating the problems there. I think related then, to this, and as Josh talked about in terms of these personnel, cost growth and what that means, when we have new revenue and when we have particularly new ongoing funding, council has options, the city has options about expanding service levels, increasing city employee compensation, or making investments in infrastructure efficiencies and innovations. And one of the things that this slide is trying to get at is that to the extent we are adding additional staff or programs, or to the extent we're increasing employee compensation, we really are creating a long-term structural deficit that's going to require service cuts somewhere else. Because as we've shown, our general fund revenue historically has not kept up with those personnel cost growth increases. On the other hand, to the extent we can invest in our infrastructure backlog, or to the extent we can invest in efficiencies or innovations, we can actually see some long-term savings in the city, things that are going to bend that long-term cost curve down. And so I just think as we talk about both where the funding has gone and where any additional funding may go, I think it's important to keep that in mind, that there is that trade-off between that long-term cost curve within the city. Getting a little bit more specific in terms of what we're looking at for 2016-17, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what some of the potential liabilities that we're facing are, and then Josh is going to talk a little bit about where we are. We don't have numbers for you yet today, but I think you can give at least a little bit of a sense. Looking at the potential 2016-17 requests, and again, I don't think these lists on the next few slides are totally comprehensive, but we tried to capture the things that we know are likely to be coming back and be requested in 2016-17. We know there's a housing commitment of $20 million, and what we've shown here on this slide is breaking that down ongoing and one time. That's obviously going to be a council decision, so this is very much a swag at this point, but putting $5 million of general fund into housing ongoing. We know looking at 15-16, there's about $2.7 million of recurring requests. We know that in the fall bump we're going to talk about shortly, there's about $1.7 million that's being requested that we know bureaus have said they will be back in the 16-17 budget to ask for those again. The 13 firefighter positions, those are still one-time funded and will be expiring at the end of this year, absent some additional ongoing funding. We know the parks arbitration decision, phase one, we have it in there at $2.3 million, still working to sort of finalize what that year-long cost would be. But again, we know that that's just phase one, and phase two at this point is an unknown cost, but could be potentially large. We've talked, I know the city's talked a little bit about short-term rental taxes and using those for the Housing Investment Fund. Again, those are already in the forecast, so that's about $1.3 million of short-term rental taxes. And then body cameras we threw in as about a $700,000 ongoing cost. There's a little bit more of an upfront one-time cost, but that's a very low confidence estimate of what an ongoing cost for body cameras would be. So again, even without including the phase two of the parks arbitration decision, we're looking at over $15 million of potential ongoing requests in 16-17. And then on the one-time side, there's about $5 million of housing, and of course there will be a lot more.
Andrew, just for purposes of clarity, where does the $15 work that we've committed to fall within the ongoing requests?
Well, the update to the fair wage policy for our contractors was already paid for on an ongoing basis as part of this year's budget. Is that what you're referring to?
There's also been conversations about parks employees and others. So where are you penciling that in as a potential?
So that is not currently on the list. Yeah, to the extent we make. And then looking at, again, we talked a little bit about the recurring 15-16 requests. I won't go through these in detail, but again, sort of a list of things that we know were funded one time in 2015-16 that either the Bureau or a council member has noted will likely be back in the 16-17 budget asking for ongoing funding. As you can see, that listed a little over $2 million. And then in terms of the fall bump again.
I'm curious, on the previous slide, you have it listed as $2.7 million. Are you just leaving some things out intentionally?
Oh.
Or
it is 2.7, do you remember? Oh, yeah. I think that was a we originally had the only marijuana regulatory positions on there, but since they're fee-funded, we did take those off. I think we didn't catch it on the previous slide. And then potential recurring fall bump requests, and we're going to talk about these in a few minutes. So, again, we don't need to spend a lot of time on them, but these are our requests that, again, we know are in the fall bump that will be back if funded, or frankly, if they're funded or if they're not funded, we expect to see these back in the 16-17 budget process.
Okay. As Andrew said, we don't have numbers for you. There's reasons for that that we'll illuminate as we go through the next couple slides. We are expecting only modest revenue growth this year, at least in terms of the forecast and at least in terms of the December forecast. The reality is we don't know enough about business license taxes to dramatically change that forecast in December. We get 2/3 of our revenue after April 15th, and so it's to avoid moving that forecast all over the place based on some short-term look at it, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Property taxes, we will see an increase, probably about $3 million ongoing. Like I said, that higher than expected growth will add some. Transient lodging taxes will probably see a low seven figures increase, $1 or $2 million as well. But we get a utility license payment November 15th. We also get some transient lodging data that'll help inform the forecast. We get the last piece of inflation data too that will help inform the forecast. And then as we've been talking about, there's a high likelihood that potential obligations will offset any revenue increases. This is particularly the case in ongoing. And that is because, as you recall, the state lost its state and local governments for that matter, lost their the PERS case right after the April forecast came out, actually. And we're still crunching the numbers, but it looks like the out years in particular of the forecast, we're going to have to increase our expectations for PERS costs in a way that will offset almost any ongoing sort of revenue stream that we can see at least for the December forecast. So next steps, as I mentioned, mid-November we'll get a little bit more information. We get those PERS advisory rates for the city from PERS at the end of November. That will help us fine-tune our expectations about where we think our PERS costs are going to land. But we built in quite a bit of room for this next biennium. It's the biennium after where I think we're vulnerable to seeing some larger increases than expected. Cal targets will be released November 18th, and our budget kickoff for bureaus, and the forecast will be released in mid-December. That's where we are.
Go ahead, Don.
So, Andrew, let me go back to the slide that says potential FY 2016 requests and just make sure I understand how that relates to the previous slide called structural issue. If I'm sitting at this table later in the process and I have a request for 13 firefighters at $1.4 million, if I'm looking at a 10-year cost and I go out 10 years and assume the same rate, it looks like that year will be about $3.5 million at 120% increase. And then I add year 2 through 9, that's the total city liability for wages only for 13 firefighters for 10 years. Is that accurate? Is that an accurate thought process?
For those individuals, perhaps.
Yes.
For the city, not necessarily, because of what Commissioner Fish was talking about, where to the extent that there's turnover, you can get savings from other individuals within the Bureau to help cover those.
Assuming no turnover, that's the cost for those 13 individuals.
Sure.
Well, it's always the cost for those 13 individuals.
For those individuals.
There's an offset through, okay.
Attrition.
If I'm thinking 10 years ahead, that's a huge liability for the city.
Potentially.
Okay.
I've just been thinking about something that Josh mentioned earlier about the number of city employees being substantially similar to what it was 10 years ago. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I actually don't know if we have the numbers today, but we can get those to you.
I think the answer is no. I mean, the last time I saw a chart, which I think you generated about a year or so ago for me, I mean, we're essentially flat for the last 10 years, total city employees.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is because, you know, for citizens who are concerned about the cost of government, we've experienced significant population growth in that time, and the size of this city government has stayed about the same, which is a testament to, you know, efficiency to the extent that any of those key performance indicators have been going up, right? I mean, I think that's a message worth putting somewhere.
It's about 5,600 full-time, and again, I had that chart in my office and looked at it occasionally over the last couple of years, but you did this for me a couple of years ago, but it's relatively flat, and you're right, given what's happened to the size of the population or even the size of the city budget, total full-time positions have not increased very much.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
it's different in different. Well, it's different in different bureaus. So, development services went cut half to about from 300 to 150. They're now back up to where they were. So there's those additional jobs over the past 5 years, and then in parks, we're currently under the arbiter's decision required to change some part-time seasonals to either full-time or certainly ongoing benefited positions. So we just did 86 of those, is what's represented in that 2.3 million. So yes, there's still the same number of employees, perhaps, but they're actually getting paid properly rather than being paid seasonal workers.
In 2006-07, we had 5,765, and the current budget, 2015-16, it's 5,628, so down by a little more than 100 in that period of
that
time. There was a ramp up to about 6,000 and then a decline.
Is that actual employees or full-time equivalents?
Full-time equivalents.
Okay. Let's talk about, move into then the conversation about budget guidance. I'll see where we are on the slides here. There we go. Jeremy, you want to talk about budget calendar?
So the budget calendar should look pretty similar to years past. It's a draft budget calendar at this point. We haven't brought it forward for council approval yet, but we're hoping after today's work session, if there aren't any issues, we can bring that forward in the next month or so. As you can see, we're bringing, as usual, about February 1st, February 2nd, right in that time frame is usually when bureaus bring in their requested budget submissions. This includes requests for special appropriations as well, if we can get them in by that deadline. CBO works on the reviews over about the next month, and you usually get those right around, you know, beginning of March, March 7th or so. Then we'll move into about 3 weeks of work sessions, including the citizen advisors. I think we already have those on everybody's schedule, so hopefully we can, you know, it's about 6 hours a week or so over that three-week time frame. Moves into the mayor's proposed budget process in that month of April. As you can see, we also have a couple tentative dates for the community budget forums on April 5th and 12th, so we'll get those scheduled as soon as we can find locations and kind of get those on everybody's calendar as well. Going into the mayor's proposed process, we have the general fund forecast right around April 26th. The mayor is going to release his proposed budget around the 28th. We have scheduled the second approved budget work session, which will be on May 10th. So we'll be doing that again this year. We move kind of in that approved budget phase where we have the approved budget hearing. The council approves the budget on May 18th, and then we kind of get into that TSCC process. It takes about 20 days with hopefully adopting a budget on June 9th. So pretty similar to previous years. We have kind of moved it up a couple weeks to save a little bit of time, but it's pretty much the same. Questions?
Looks good. Thank you.
So then, in terms of 2016-17 budget guidance, what you see on the next slide is a draft 2016-17 budget guidance, and I think there may have been some conversations, and so we wanted to sort of have that conversation here as well in terms of, and of course there are a number of different options here. One of the things that the City Budget Office put forward, and I think the mayor has also talked about, is given the declaration of a housing state of emergency, does council want to take action in the fall bump to essentially increase the current appropriation level target for the Housing Bureau to capture at least that initial $10 million of general fund. And by doing so, that action would take place before the forecast is released. So essentially what that means is council would be saying, this is a priority, there's a housing state of emergency, and we're going to go ahead and give housing that certainty so they can go forward and develop what those packages will be in terms of how that funding will be spent. And then whatever the guidance for the rest of the city bureaus is, the Bureau of Housing would not be required to submit any reduction packages, obviously, because the intent is to get some additional funding there. And then I think as part of the budget process around housing is when council would be discussing the specifics of where that $10 million would be going. Guidance for the other bureaus, and sort of related to that decision, is the general fund discretionary and overhead. Bureaus that receive general fund discretionary and overhead would be required to submit 5% ongoing reduction options. And again, the reason for that, we don't have a forecast yet, but it is, as we've mentioned, with all of the potential requests that are coming forward, again, a draft list here that we showed you of more than $15 million, and the housing state of emergency and desire to get more general fund funding there, it seems almost certain that we would need to see some reductions from bureaus. And so, again, I think what a 5% does is it again sends that signal to bureaus that they need to be putting some thought into what those reductions would be. Council then would be able to look at the forecast combined with those reductions and make some decisions in terms of that internal allocation within the city. Other requested budget requirements for non-general fund bureaus would be, under this scenario, would be at the commissioner in charge's discretion. So again, for water and sewer, for the OMF internal services, for bureaus that rely on programs, on fees, and so forth. Again, commissioner in charge looking, because those bureaus are in such different fiscal situations.
So what do you propose to do about the parks obligation?
At this point, I think that's a good conversation for council to have. Again, one of the reasons we came forward with this was given the council's declaration of a housing emergency, seemed to put that in a different category than some of the other budget obligations.
So, colleagues, I would suggest that having an arbiter's directive to say that we have to pay our parks workers appropriately is in a similar vein, and I would propose that we put that, at least some of it, up above the line in the Cal, like housing.
Well, I agree. It's a different situation. I have to say, coming out of the work set, the executive session, and then some of the events of the past week, I now feel like I need another executive session to have to drill down on what the actual numbers are and what the strategy is. And until we do that, I'm not prepared to commit to anything because I thought I understood the parameters, and now I don't understand them as well.
Be glad to talk with you about that one-on-one, as well as I think as another executive session would be a good suggestion. I was really struck by the City Budget Office's analysis of the Housing Bureau's budget last year and had some questions about performance management and outcomes there. So before we agree that we don't want any cuts in housing and that we're going to do these appropriations, I would really like to have some more information from the City Budget Office as to your advice about how to find out which programs are working and which ones are not.
I think, as a general matter, one of the things that we have said is that to the extent there is this additional investment in housing, I think it's really important that we know what the goals are and what the expected outcomes are of that investment. And I think that does require looking at some of those programs to see what is working the best and then ensuring that that's where those funds are going. I think there is an opportunity during the budget process, even under this guidance, I think there's an opportunity in the budget process for council to have a really robust conversation about how that $10 million general fund, and I know there's some other resources being discussed as well, how that gets allocated into which programs.
I'm concerned about the not putting forward cut packages, although certainly glad that we will not be having the previous cut packages from housing, all of which were untenable and which I voted against. But I hope that there will be a requirement for the Housing Bureau to drill down into their structure and look at, are there more efficient ways of doing things and are there ways to get better outcomes with all of their money as well as the additional $10 million or whatever it ends up being.
So my feeling about this, I'll reflect the conversation that we've had and also some conversation I've had with Andrew. I think both the housing state of emergency and the parks arbitration requirements are I would call them budget imperatives. We have to do something. We have to build both of those assumptions at some level into our construction of a proposed budget. We have evaluation to do. Are we spending the money the right way now? Exactly how much is that mandate from the arbitrator? And how quickly, over how many years, do we have to phase it in? And then how do we make good on our housing state of emergency in a significant way? So to me, it's both and, with the big asterisk that we still have to quantify each one and see how many general fund dollars we have to spend. We have other budgetary imperatives outside of the general fund budget, like we need to increase transportation revenue. But to me, I think that's the art of this, is that both of these are going to have to be built at some quantity into the budget guidance, and then I've got to look at the forecast and come up with a proposed budget that tries to meet both goals and still make acceptable trade-offs in other bureau budgets in order to achieve them.
I have a hard time, given what we just heard, which is that it's likely that our increased demands in the budget will be at least equal to any increased revenues, I would have a hard time saying that we should commit right now to cutting the rest of the general fund budget by $10 million in order to increase the housing budget by $10 million.
No, I mean, again, that's important to remember in the stages of this process. We're not committing to a budget, but we are giving instructions for how to prepare the proposals. We still have all the opportunity that we always have to decide for or against a given bureau's budget or a given decision package in terms of what we add or subtract.
That's a very important clarification. I mean, I don't have an objection to, it's probably a good idea for all of the bureaus, you know, every year, frankly, to go through the 5% cut exercise.
Actually, it's miserable, Commissioner. It is really soul-destroying, and it's really hard on our community partners and on our employees, because when we're talking about cuts, we're talking about people losing their jobs. So that having that exercise every year, which we did over the course of the recession, sorry to interrupt, was just awful, and I want to emphasize how awful it was.
I appreciate that. It's also an opportunity to, hopefully, to let the public know what the consequences, how tight our budgets are, and what the consequences of cuts would be. But what I want to make clear is nobody here is offering to cut anything in the rest of the budget by millions of dollars. I mean, my one major general fund bureau is BOEC, where everybody's working forced overtime constantly, and they could not tolerate any kind of cut in their budget. So I just think, there's a big difference between voting to go through an analytical process and making a commitment that we're going to be able to find $10 billion, is what I'm saying.
So, Mayor, just if I could just add a comment to this. you made a judgment last year in a time of plenty not to do a modified zero-based budgeting. There is, in line with what Commissioner Fritz just said, there's an argument for doing it, especially in the good years, because it takes away some of that anxiety, and it gets back to what is the public benefit of a modified zero-based budgeting exercise. In the 7 years that I've been on the council, I thought the exercise we went through in your first year, which was very painful and very difficult, and I accept all those observations, forced a kind of prioritization that we had not done before. And it is against sort of those tough, forced choices that bureaus, I think, were especially focused on prioritizing, not doing it in a loose and casual way, but recognizing that they may lose something. So what's really fundamental? And I, as a member of council, and remember, I used to have two general fund bureaus that competed. Now I have two utilities that are outside of the general fund family, so I've had a taste of both. I just found that it created a discipline in our budget process that was useful. Now, I take Commissioner Fritz's point very seriously that it also creates enormous anxiety and it puts very valued employees in a very tough spot. I accept all that. But I haven't seen a better exercise in terms of forcing bureaus to declare what's important and what isn't. And even if you don't take the cuts, I think the exercise itself has proven to be very beneficial in terms of creating priorities.
The challenge, though, is it's all based on what was your previous year. Whether, and I appreciate that we're now saying that housing has historically been underfunded and needs to get better funded, so we're rebalancing from that. We know that more than half the general fund budget is police and fire. Are we, and as Commissioner Novick pointed out, BOAC, are we going to, as we did during the recession, try to hold the public safety bureaus more harmless? That's a question that I would need to know before we can go into this session. The other question for me is Parks looking at a 5% cut plus a 16% cut if we have to absorb all of the costs ourselves? Or are other bureaus going to share in those costs? Because historically, Parks has been underfunded, perhaps as much as housing, because so many of our workers have been getting minimum wage with no benefits.
Well, I do think, I mean, notwithstanding the pain people get put through, I think a 5% cut is a healthy exercise for this council to undertake.
Yeah, I think in retrospect, it would have been a good idea to do it even in the surplus year, because it does perhaps reduce the shock value a little bit to the bureaus that we are once again going to ask you to do this.
I would also agree that public safety agencies should not necessarily be exempt from the 5% cut.
Commissioner Fritz, this obviously creates even more work, but would it alleviate some of your concerns if we simply established a practice of also asking bureaus to say what they would do with a 5% increase? I mean, we're not likely to see a 5% increase, but I think that in terms of sort of the public discussion, having bureaus explain, here's some things we really like to do, here's what it would cost, might be valuable.
The way we survived the budget discussions during the recession was to be dreaming as well, to be thinking about, well, we don't have it this year, but what would we do if we had more money? How could we create the efficiencies and the better programs? So certainly that's what I'll be doing in my bureaus, is looking at, yeah, we can't do it this year, but what is a long-term plan for achieving equity of funding across the neighborhood association boundaries? What is the long-term plan for how we would run parks? I have to go back to the question of when are we going to decide whether Parks is going to absorb the entire cost of the arbitration decision or whether that's going to be shared.
But doesn't that decision come later when we get the numbers, the forecast numbers? I mean, we haven't even talked about the impact of the Saltzman rule, but that's an annual part of our annual ritual is we get these dour and gloomy forecasts from the guys in the gray suits crunching our numbers. And at some point, the Saltzman rule kicks in, and there's typically a little more money. But without that number, we don't know how much we might have to take from any cuts. So, and that number doesn't come to us until when, Andrew?
December is the first, the first
we're
forecast.
We're required to have a settlement by December 1st.
Yeah, the Saltzman rule is the financial policy that says we need to forecast conservatively.
Again, on the parts issues, Commissioner Fritz, my preference would be to have an executive session because I am actually less clear today than I was actually at the close of our last session. So let's go back and have that conversation privately.
Sounds like we might want to do that fairly quickly, and then I can issue guidance. You're going to need it really fast. You're going to need guidance sooner than that.
So there is a decision, I guess I would say two things. There is a decision in the fall bump that'll be coming next week if council wants to adjust the Housing Bureau's current appropriation level target. That is a decision that should be made as part of the fall bump. Guidance to the bureaus, there's no set timeline on. Okay. As we've heard earlier, is better for them, but there is a little bit of time to work that out.
In the bump, how are you proposing to fund the current obligation of the 86 workers that are now going to be bargaining unit?
So without skipping quite to the bump yet, but specifically on that question, the proposed bump before you sets $900,000 of general fund contingency aside, holds it for the Parks Bureau until the spring, and then expects the Parks Bureau to then absorb the remainder of the current year costs, which we don't know what those current year costs are. but maybe to the tune of $600,000 or $700,000. And when I say absorb out of their comp set aside,
we can't do that. So that essentially is a cut to parks in the bump. My understanding, when we put it as a one time in the last year's budget, we were going to talk about general comp set aside, not just parks.
And yeah, that's an option for council to make those cuts in other bureaus. I mean, that's the distinction you're making, is between cutting.
Well,
you know,
it is the question of, does parks eat it, or do we share the pain? Right. And that's, I think, a question that needs, that at least for this year's, I need to know, because we will need to probably take cuts in parks this year.
So let me hold that just for a couple minutes. I think we just have one more slide here on the council budget work sessions. And again, just doesn't necessarily need to be decided today, but wanted to put on the table, again, given some of the feedback from our Kaizen event, from the bureaus, and discussions with your offices, in terms of making the council budget work sessions relevant, the most relevant as they can be for you as a council and for our citizen budget advisors as well. We've put three options there in terms of, and all of these are you know, bureau-specific work sessions. We sort of did topic-centered work sessions a couple years ago, and while there were some advantages to that, the feedback generally was that people felt like they had a hard time digging into a particular bureau's budget when we were talking about, you know, public safety as a whole or emergency management as a whole. So keeping a bureau-specific focus, option number one is bureau presentations followed by council questions. So this is the more traditional approach that we've generally done, that a bureau presents something and council asks questions. Option number two is that bureaus would receive questions from council prior to those work sessions, and the discussion would be focused around council's areas of interest. So this would require a little bit more pre-work with both, and I think that would be both council and our citizen advisors, but essentially having the time scheduled, but making sure the bureaus are receiving questions from you all. What are you most interested in hearing from that particular bureau in advance? And then option number three actually says, maybe we don't need work sessions for every bureau. Maybe we just want to focus on specific bureaus, again, based on council priorities. So maybe the city budget office doesn't need to have a budget work session, but some of the other bureaus you may want to hear from. So again, we don't need to necessarily make that decision today, but we wanted to put those options on the table just for feedback.
I was just going to say, I mean, it seems to me like you could do option two and three as a combination, because if you had a bureau for which there were very few or no questions, then that would essentially take you to option three.
Right.
I mean, because if the bureau presentations were based on input from council and advisors, and there were very limited questions, that would let you know that that was a bureau that probably didn't need to make a presentation.
If we're going to be in a cut budget, I suggest every bureau is going to want to present to council, because they're going to want to try to make their case for why the cut should not be made.
But that doesn't necessarily prohibit us from doing some of what you've recommended in option two or three. That is specifically getting some questions to bureaus in advance, but it sounds like there may be more of an interest in, if we are indeed looking at trade-offs and cuts, making sure that each bureau does get a chance to make its case.
And maybe there is a combination there between one and two. So yeah. All bureaus do have a work session, but with some questions in advance. Again, I think the feedback I've gotten from most of your offices about past work sessions is that they would be a little bit more relevant if we dug into some of the issues specifically, a little bit less high level on the bureau and a little bit more specifics on the budget. And I think we could get there by getting some questions in advance. So, okay, great. So that is the end of the 16-17 portion of the work session. I don't know if we want to just go straight into, roll right into bump. Let's do it.
Andrew? What sort of time constraints would number two put on your office to get the budgets out in time so the questions could be formulated?
We would build that into our process. We would, while we're writing our reviews of bureau budgets, we would probably be speaking to you and to council offices about things that you want to hear. Yeah,
good,
so it
good.
Would be a simultaneous.
Thank you.
Okay, let me shift then, and we can We do not have slides for this portion of the conversation. Shifting into the 2015-16 fall bump, and with me today is Jessica Kennard, who's our bump coordinator and relatively new to the city. She'll kick me into the table. One of our California transplants that we talked about earlier originally in the presentation, but originally an Oregon native, so we got her back, which is great. So what we're going to do is we'll sort of walk through the fall bump. And what you have on the table before you is the mayor's proposed bump, again, with the filing deadline. So we filed that last night, work session today to discuss the proposed bump. It will be coming to council next week for conversation and vote. Feel free to jump in at any point in time. There's quite a bit in the fall bump, and I'll just sort of go through all the various pieces. And I'll try and point you to different places to might help follow along. And let's get that table around. It's the same one I have here. So the fall bump is an opportunity for bureaus to reconcile prior year ending balances. It's an opportunity for them to make adjustments within their budget, and it's an opportunity for them to request resources if needed for the current fiscal year. One of the things, just to give an overall sense of where we ended the year, I sent an email to council a few weeks ago about the concern that we were going to miss ending fund balance by about $3 million. It turns out that we actually exceeded ending fund balance, and we had an ending fund balance that was budgeted at about $40.2 million. We have a beginning balance that's $46.2 million, so we actually ended up exceeding balance by about $6 million. And the difference there was what happened with Bureau encumbrances. So we had about $9 million of encumbrances on the books. It turns out the Bureau's only requested about $3.7 million. And so that savings really was the difference in terms of where we ended up. When I talk about that $46.2 million beginning balance, we do still have to back out of that, again, the encumbrances, and I'll go to the F1 report in just a minute that's a little bit more familiar. But what we end up with in terms of excess balance under city financial policy is $1.45 million, and then per policy, 50% of that needs to be spent on infrastructure maintenance and replacement. So again, about $720,000 for that. In terms of overall general fund contingency, the table that's coming around now may be a good place to start, just to give an overall sense of where we are in the proposed bump. So if everyone has that one pager that came around separately, what you can see at the top there, before the fall bump, general fund contingency, this is unrestricted contingency, is about $2.2 million. What we were able to add to that, we added about $544,000 from unallocated fair wage set aside when council made the decision to change the fair wage policy to pay our contractors. We set aside about $900,000. The actual costs for the current year were lower than that, about $300,000. So we were able to add that remaining $544,000 to contingency. And then again, as I mentioned, that $1.4 million ending fund balance, half is going to go to capital, but then the other half goes into contingency, and that's the $724,000 number you see there. So the total available unrestricted contingency is just under $3.5 million, again, as we start talking about the bump. Now, I'll talk in more detail about the proposed expenditures listed below, but in total, the mayor's proposed bump spends about $4.9 million, just under $4.9 million. And so actually a little bit more than what is available. And so as a result, we did reallocate some of the Portland Building debt service from the current fiscal year, 2015-16, $2.5 million to replenish contingency and get that number back up to $1.1 million. What's going on there with the Portland Building is as you'll recall in the budget process, you set aside, again, $2,575,000 that would pay debt service. That would be the general fund share of that debt service. Given the updated timelines and council decision to move forward, that debt service is not needed in 2015-16. So that is available to reprogram to some of these other priorities. But it will be needed again in future years. And one of the principles, and I think you've heard Ken Rust and Fred Mueller talk to you about this, of the Portland Building project is, and all of our capital projects, is making sure we have a 5% cash upfront on those projects. And so that future year funding and potentially some other funding will still be needed to hit that cash target. But it was determined that was available to get to that $1.1 million. And then at a high level, you can see of that $4.9 million that's being spent, $2.7 million of that is going to housing and shelter. $900,000 is being set aside for the parks labor costs. $600,000 for police background investigators, and then just about $700,000.